Okay, well, might as well make a start as we've everybody's here, or everybody's likely to come is here. So the question, so FAQ tonight, FAQ is it true that the rich are not the problem? So this is a bit of a more speculative than, well, they're mostly speculative, but this one possibly even more so. So now it just happened that the other day I was reading a news story, you might have seen it, about how Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk have been sniping each other at each other on Twitter about their respective sightseeing space programs. So Jeff's got Blue Origin, Elon Musk has got SpaceX. So Jeff's Blue Origin company is going to launch a bunch of passengers, pretty rich passengers, 60 miles up to the edge of space, where they'll get the chance to float around in ultra low gravity for 3 minutes, and then they go back down again. And Jeff is expecting to sell seats for this must-have experience for around £200,000 each. Although at the moment that they cost a lot more than that, so that's his economy price. Meanwhile, Elon Musk is going to launch a SpaceX Dragon ship in the autumn, which will carry civilian passengers actually into space. They'll go into orbit for several days before coming down. No details of ticket prices there, so don't get too excited yet. And of course, there's always Richard Branson and his suborbital rocket plane system. I have to admire Richard Branson's chutzpah for calling his suborbital rocket system Virgin Galactic. I'm not even going to mention the whole waste of resources involved in all this ruling class joyriding. A comment would be redundant, frankly. Anyway, what struck me was, I'm going to put this in the speaking queue. I've got a couple of pictures that you can look at. So if you're not in the speaking queue, just go and click in it. Here's the picture of Jeff Bezos' rocket. I'm just putting it in now. Right, now if you click on that, the picture pops out in a large window so you can see it properly. Now, the question I want to ask is, does this rocket remind you of anything? Now, I don't want to resort to puerile seaside humour, or possibly puerile Freudian humour, but does it or does it not look like a giant erect penis? Now, the reason given for this bulbous head on the top is that it's got to fit 6 passengers inside a large viewing gallery. But that's got to be an excuse. It surely is designed to look like a penis.
I'll tell you something, Paddy. Sorry to interrupt. It doesn't inspire confidence.
No. But what it makes me think is that Jeff is making a big macho statement here. He's the richest man in the world. If he keeps accumulating capital at the rate he's going, he's likely to be the world's first dollar trillionaire. He's so rich, he can afford his own space company with rockets that look like penises. So maybe what he's saying is that, you know, after he's fucked all the workers and after he's fucked the planet, he's going to fuck off to Mars. And it can't be an accident that Jeff Bezos looks like Ernst Stavro Blofeld from the James Bond movies. So here's a quick chart of Jeff Bezos's rise to the top. I'll just put this in following. There aren't many of these pictures, so don't worry. You don't have to look at too many. But this is Jeff Bezos's rise to the top. This is already out of date, by the way, because as you probably heard already, his wealth rocketed by 74% during the pandemic. Actually, during the pandemic, the billionaire class as a whole got 54% richer. Now, as you know, less than 1% already own around 46% of the world's wealth. And the rate of accumulation must be accelerating as the trend continues upwards. Just to give you a bit of context, here's a chart. This is the last picture, don't worry. Here's a chart of the rising global wealth over the last couple of hundred years. Well, actually, it goes from the last millennium, but it's absolutely incredible. It's a hockey stick, basically. There's nothing going on until around about the start of the Industrial Revolution, and it's growing pretty fast during the 19th century, but then in the 20th century, it's absolutely rocketing. You can see it's going vertically up. Now, when at the time when Marx was writing, the amount of wealth was tiny compared to what it is now. And I can't help wondering what he would say about today's mind-boggling level of inequality. Now, you would think from this, this is not a representative chart. It's inequality by country. It's not inequality by individual. But I mean, we already know that the richest 1% own 50% of the wealth. So you can extrapolate from this chart. You would think, well, I would think that from the number of super rich must be shrinking. If they're getting richer and richer at the level of 54% last year, then the actual number of super rich must be shrinking. Otherwise, where is all this extra capital coming from? But it's not shrinking. The number of billionaires is actually increasing. Forbes reported just in April that the number of billionaires, well, in their words, exploded. Analogy to rocket ships notwithstanding, it exploded in 2020 by 30%. It went up, in other words, 660 more billionaires in 2020, going up to a total of 2,755. So the rich are not only getting richer, but there's more of them. Now, if I understand if Steve's done his work well and I understand my Marxian economics well enough, this can only be due to three things. If the rich are getting richer and there are more of them, this must be due to either intensification of work, longer working days, or greater productivity of workers. In other words, the extraction of surplus value is going up. The rich are getting richer and we are working harder and harder to pay for it. Amazon workers who've had to piss into bottles because they're not allowed time for toilet breaks will certainly be able to vouch for that. And a recent WHO report, which was reported only the other day, has revealed, I'll put a link in as well for this, has revealed that long working hours are killing 750,000 workers every year. That's just long working hours. That's the link's in there as well. Of course, this is wonderful for the rich. As long as they can keep it up, as long as they can keep improving on this rate of exploitation, they're never going to stop getting richer. But there must be a ceiling somewhere. Eventually, they must reach a ceiling beyond which they can't extract any more from workers. Well, this has happened before, but then what happens is that someone invents new technology that breaks the productive ceiling, and accumulation can then accelerate again. Now, an example of this is that's coming up in the future is powered exoskeletons, which are now being trialled with workers in factories and warehouses to raise their lifting and carrying capacity and, of course, their endurance. I'm going to put another link in here for a recent BBC article on this, on powered exoskeletons, if you're interested. So welcome to the robo future. But even given technology, with any conceivable technology, there surely is a theoretical limit to how productive one human being can be. There are only so many hours in the day, and humans have finite mental and physical abilities. So is there an absolute limit to the productivity they can squeeze out of us? And what happens if they hit it? Now, I vaguely recall an old fisherman's trick. I think it was a Chinese trick. Basically, the idea is you bury a box full of small maggots and you wait a week, at the end of which you dig up the box, and inside you find you've got one big fat maggot which you can use to go and catch the biggest fish with. Well, that's what the capitalists are like. They feed off us, and if they can't do that anymore, they'll feed off each other. So what happens when you've got one super rich fat maggot left? Or maybe just half a dozen. If 2,755 billionaires control 46% of global wealth, how much will a handful of trillionaires control? They'll be too big for any government and too powerful for any law. They'll be omnipotent, really, able to impose pretty much any terms they like. Now, The reason I say all this is because we always say that it's not the rich who are the problem, it's the system. If we can get majority agreement to overthrow the system, the rich won't be able to do anything. But the rich are not innocent bystanders in all this. They certainly are the problem, or at least part of it. They own and control the media, and they have every reason to want to stop socialist ideas ever spreading in the first place. And they seem pretty damn good at that. The only reason they can't erase workers' ideas of anti-capitalist revolution completely is that they would have to overrule nation-states and abolish all democratic freedoms. And they aren't powerful enough to do that. At least not yet. Up to now, national state structures have been useful to capitalists, not just to keep workers in line, but to mediate disputes among themselves, including getting workers to fight their wars. But could they one day become so powerful that they don't need liberal democracies, or even nation states anymore, because there is no fractious ruling class, just a kind of shadowy committee of global oligarchs? We say that the world has outgrown the fetters of capitalism and needs to throw off those fetters to create a new society that's more efficient and egalitarian because it's based on common ownership. But the trajectory of the super-rich is in the opposite direction, towards ever greater accumulation of capital and the elimination of rivals, until they can also throw off the fetters of capitalist competition and create a new society that's more efficient for them because it's based on mass slavery. Okay, there we are. That's my question, or a set of questions. So I'm now going to throw it open to whoever wants to make a comment.
Andy, so not so much making a comment, could you elaborate upon this photo that you put up about the Iron Man body armour? I mean, what's the purpose of it, do you know?
Yeah, it's a powered what's called an exoskeleton, a powered suit that you put on that gives you assisted, a bit like power steering in a car, it gives you assisted lifting capability. So you can lift, much heavier weights than you would be able to do otherwise. You can carry much heavier things. You can, you've got assisted walking, so you can walk further and keep going further. You don't get tired so quickly, this sort of thing. So, yeah, so this is what's round the corner for workers to get more out of them, essentially.
Thanks for that, Paddy. It might help me home from the pub on a Friday night then. My legs aren't giving way.
Dougie's put his...
Just on that, I said to Paddy when this first came out that it'd be really good if you went on strike and you could just walk out with these things so you could slightly face up to the police oppression of the picket line.
Well, I know Doug is in the queue, but just to answer that quickly, it's fine. The reason why these things have not taken off with the military, or of course, so they've been looking into these for years, is the amount of power they take. You have to, they basically have to be on attached to the mains, because the battery you'd have to have with them. It would be like several car batteries, so it would defeat the purpose if you were having to lug around huge batteries. So that's why they're not. But in a factory situation, if they're on the mains, or rechargeable every 15 minutes or so, it would work. Okay, Dougie.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting what you said. I watched a video, it was a YouTube video, did Marx save capitalism or whatever? And it basically argued that Marx predicted greater exploitation and more penury for the workers. But as a counter position on that, they mentioned the health service and minimum wage and shorter working week, although I know you said people are working longer and dying because they are, But it was quite an interesting video, although I didn't agree with the premise that Marx saved capitalism. But, I mean, it was quite an interesting take on things, really, But, I mean, I just thought I'd mention that. So,
well, who was it said you better give the people reforms, otherwise they'll give you revolution. Somebody who's famous said that. Anyway, Howard.
I think that's probably true.
Dougie, your sound is breaking up.
Yeah, he's very crackly. I don't know, it's something to do with his microphone. Howard?
If I were somebody sort of coming to the party for the first time tonight and hearing what you just had to say, Paddy, I might think that we were sort of, you know, believers in one of these cult conspiracies, you know, these shadowy people who are going to be behind everything and we won't be able to stop them. It was getting to sound a bit like that. He probably didn't mean it to. It's a possible scenario, but, it's extremely hypothetical. I mean, it hasn't happened so far. And, will it happen in the future? Will sort of workers be so worked off their feet, et cetera, that they won't be able to protest? Will the rate of exploitation go sort of so high? And will there be just a few people who own and control everything and don't need the state? Well, you know, anything's possible, but all right. It's an idea to think about.
Well, I was just exploring the I was just wondering what theoretical obstacle there was to it. I mean, I couldn't think of a theoretical obstacle to it, so that's why I thought I'd try it out tonight. Okay, Darren next.
Actually, can I? I'll come back. I'm just still thinking about stuff. Thank you.
Okay, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for why that possibly wouldn't happen, you need to look at what's happening in China at the minute. I mean, you've got a very repressive regime, and you've got obvious signs that the capitalist class is getting sick of being controlled by the state. You've got this Ma fella, you've got the capitalists in Hong Kong, and somebody else was, I can't remember the guy's name, but some billionaire who put some criticism of the party up on social media, soon had to withdraw it because he'd obviously received threats. But they at the moment are going through this situation where they're having to struggle to an extent, an analogous way to which the British capitalist class had to struggle against feudalism. But the issue is that although you might have a small number of these billionaire, trillionaire people, they're not going to be united. And that would tend to me to tend to suggest that sort of dictatorial dystopia that you were wondering about isn't going to happen. It also isn't going to happen because modern industry depends on committed free workers. I don't think the sort of 1984 scenario could possibly happen when you're relying on people to write computer programs, to handle medical research and stuff like that. That is not possible under a slave society. It's got to be people that whip themselves rather than be whipped. So just leave it at that for a minute.
Just on that quickly, I was thinking, China is a good example, isn't it? It's interesting to see. I mean, they've massively grown in the last 20 years. It's gigantic. They've overtaken the USA in terms of, carbon footprint, everything. And the question whether the Chinese, repressive state remains sustainable in that situation is a bit of a moot question. If China starts to liberalise, that will tend at some point, that will tend to kind of confirm what we've always said about capitalism. But, on the other hand, if it doesn't, maybe the opposite is the case. Anyway, Darren.
could just come back in.
Oh, all right.
Just talk about that parallel with the British capitalist class. They were increasingly opposed to the costs of the state over which they had no control. So I'd suggest that there's that sort of, basically, the state is like a leech on the capitalist class. And they realise that. And that is what is going to force a democracy in China. How long it'll take, I don't know. But I'm pretty sure that is going. Okay, that's it.
Okay, yeah. The other thing about China is what we don't hear about a lot is union activity. But there are unions in China, and there are or the equivalent unions, and workers do get bolshie in China. I don't know much about it, but I know that I've read stuff about this before. So, with the booming economy, it puts workers in quite a good position to start putting the screws on bosses. And as you say, Steve, it also puts Chinese companies in quite a good position to put the screws on the state. So I think it's all to play for at the moment. It's going to tell us a lot, whichever way it goes. Anyway, Freddie.
Yeah, thanks, Paddy. Let me say, first of all, that we know when we were talking pre-meeting starting proper and, subject matters, etc., this is one of the things I certainly enjoy about tonight, is this sort of discussion and the thoughtfulness, etc., that goes in behind it. So, for me, this is an interesting subject, because I think we all know, I think there's probably all party members that are on here just now. I don't know if there's any visitors or not, but anyway, all party members. The party, I think, has been pretty consistent in that as the case for socialism grows, as it starts to gather momentum, we will start to get greater concessions, etc. And I think if we look back at countries where there's been oppression, a lot like you take the sort of former USSR, the way that there's still oppression there, of that there's no doubt, but the way it started to disintegrate. And other countries in the world, like Germany, etc., East Germany, I should say, the way things started to evolve there. I think that the Bezos and the capitalist class of this world will be more inclined to make concessions, and the case for socialism will gather a momentum. There's a greater momentum. And we've seen that over the last year or two, maybe not numerically wise in the sense of party members, but in the sense of the way it spread into other countries with the socialist ideas. I think if anything were to happen, like the Bezos, etc., it would be like King Canute trying to hold the tide back. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think the workers, if they start to get too oppressed, we've seen it, the way momentums gather to oppose greater and greater restrictions. Maybe not as quickly as we like, but certainly a momentum there. So, as I say, I think it'd be more like King Canute trying to hold the tide back.
Okay, thanks, Freddie. Poor King Canute, he does get maligned, doesn't he? Even though he did murder his father and most of his family, but he didn't really try to hold the tide back. He just explained to his courtiers that even a king couldn't do that. But anyway, Janet next. Janet?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the shape of the rocket, because I think that shape is an ideal shape for the transmission of one form or another. And I don't know that what's his name had such a form of self-consciousness to think that what he was doing, the reason he built it like that. He probably didn't have a lot of choice on the shape of it anyway. And the other thing, isn't it in the nature of capitalism for the growth of these massive companies? Wasn't it always like that with the mills and the factories and their expansion, and then the oil rich people and the railway people in America they do seem to have grown and grown and grown, and then their profit-seeking methods and motives are not good enough, and so one overtakes another and buys another out. Watching a program about the Getty family the other week, very old one, I think, very old program, but they expanded and were looking for things to spend their money on in those years. So they were buying works of art and building bizarre buildings in silly places for them with the money that they had to spare. I think that these latest very, very rich people are just the latest form of the capitalist world, unfortunately, and they will overtake each other, buy each other out, fight each other, as long as we don't get them to fight for them. I think that it's just the way the profit system works, and it ought to show up the silliness of the whole thing to the workers. So I think we are the class of the problem. It's us that are not realising and not seeing what the real situation is in the world. So thank you.
Thanks, Janet. Well, I couldn't agree more. I mean, you're absolutely right, of course. I mean, and you could certainly say, well, it's the fault of the workers. But, I mean, you know, well, OK, that's a separate argument, isn't it? I mean, you know, workers know what they're told. And, you know, what are they being told? They're being given capitalist ideology through the media owned by the capitalist class. On your other point, capitalism, yeah, of course, it was always like this. But I think it's a question of scale now. If you look at that graph, you know, the scale of wealth in the last 20 or 30 years is absolutely mind-boggling. And, you know, it raises the question, you know, how is there a point where quantitative change becomes a qualitative change? You know, is there a sort of phase change in capitalism where it becomes something else? I don't know. I'm just exploring the idea. Anyway, Darren's next.
I guess I'm curious. So I apologize if I've missed part of the talk. I'm curious why. I get the point that these seemingly the Musks and Bezoses of this world are so much richer than, you know, the more recent sort of plutocrats. But what is their reason, if you like, jeopardizing a system which has benefited them so much? You know, I mean, liberal democracy for the West, state capitalist dictatorship in China, etc. And they've thrived off that. They've benefited from that, you know. So I don't necessarily understand. I mean, kind of, sounds like maybe what Howard touched upon, you know, what is the conspiratorial reason for seeming, I mean, is it just simple megalomania? You know, just even though they're profiting so handsomely from the system, it's not enough that they have to seemingly, you know, totally circumvent sort of democracy or smash democracy. I would suggest if we're concerned about extremely rich people and the poor people who support them, who are like a threat to, if you like, democratic norms, it's actually those billionaires or millionaires who are actually losing status, losing position. You know, the people who are still in themselves very, very rich, but are no longer as rich as they once were. And I think that loss of status would actually sort of channel itself into sort of political shenanigans. Because, you know, it's not conspiratorial to sort of point out that there are these sort of ideological billionaires who spend a big chunk of their money on these kind of shady NGOs and think tanks. And this goes back decades, you know. This goes back, you know, like 40, 50 years. And there's no doubt, because these are clever people, that their money has been well spent in a lot of regards. You know, the Koch brothers, I think one of them has since died, the money that they've channeled into American politics to try and sort of just even just shift the discussion is definitely worked to a certain extent. You just can't deny that. And I just think if it's, I don't think you necessarily have to look at the wealth of the individual to sort of determine whether or not they're a danger to the rest of us. It's more, if you like, the more ideological ones, the more sort of ones who actually believe their own bullshit. You know, the ones who read Atlas Shrugged when they were 15 and believed it. And I don't see that in Bezos. I don't see that in Musk. I think Musk is just an egomaniac. I think Bezos, what's fascinating about Bezos is how, to me at times, anonymous he is. You know, there isn't a cult of adoration around Bezos like there is around Musk, or there was around Gates, or there is around Buffett or Carnegie in the past, you know, where people who aspire to be like these people, so, you know, would kind of like stop any bullshit that these people would spout. You don't get that with Bezos. I mean, he is like the most, if he's a Bond villain, he's the most anonymous Bond villain I've ever seen in my life, you know. So, you know, that's just some of the thoughts I have on what other people have discussed so far.
Thanks, Darren. Well, I mean, I suppose it's hardly a revelation that some of these super rich people are in many ways sort of mediocrities. I think what I was asking is, well, you saw the chart, you know, the increasing wealth is vertical, basically vertical. Where does this go ultimately? You know, what is the trajectory of this in the end? You know, and you said that, well, they benefited from so much from capitalism. Why would they ever ditch it? But, you know, actually, we say that workers have benefited from capitalism. But we also say that it's now obsolete and we'd be better off without it. We'd be better off ditching it because there's a better system. And I'm just sort of toying with the idea, supposing the sort of super rich elite, you know, the super class of exploiters, supposing they came to the same conclusion. Capitalism has benefited them up to now, but they could be better off without it. I'm just thinking of using the Chinese state model, you know, as a possible model for them. It's not a conspiratorial thing. It's just that if you've got a few mega rich people left, and they decide to strike a deal. I mean, they make deals all the time on golf courses, in private clubs, in, you know, these private meetings at Davos and places like that. It's not conspiratorial to say that they hatch these plans amongst themselves. You know, I don't think it's particularly paranoid to suggest a kind of global, committee of oligarchs. I don't think that's beyond conception, really.
Can I just come back on that?
Of course,
just very quickly come back on that. Just to clarify, I was talking about liberal democracy rather than capitalism. I don't know if there's a misunderstanding there. I think part of the reason so secure is because, you know, the ruling ideas are perpetuated in the universities, in the media, in the newspaper. You know, so there's a whole layer of people, intellectuals going back generations, who've basically been a bulwark for this system, have excused this system, even when it's most excessive. And I would actually suggest that, you know, this idea that if there was, I'll use the word conspiracy, of these super, super rich people to suddenly to have this golf course meeting where they're saying, well, let's fuck this charade of, you know, democracy every 4 years, etc. I think they would lose that layer of people that they need. These people genuinely believe that stuff. They genuinely believe in liberal democracy. They genuinely believe in what they believe to be free market capitalism. And these plutocrats, you know, need these people. They need these. These are the people who are actually spewing this line in our schools, in our universities, in our newspapers, in our films, you know, TV. They need that layer of people. So why would they alienate those people just for the sake of it? You know, they're already, like you say, so rich now. But there's just no outside of like just somebody being so nakedly aggressive for like megalomaniac for power. I don't see any other reason why they'd want to like spoil a good thing for them. Sorry.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, let me just say this, that presumably they wouldn't alienate their support layer if they didn't think they could get away with it. You know, if they thought that they still needed them, then of course they wouldn't do it. It's only if they just didn't need anybody. Anyway, so yeah, Steve.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Darren's quite right. You've got the example in England just now of a complete dichotomy in the capitalist class. The industrial capitalist class didn't want to come out of Europe. It appears that the finances did. The finances won by conning the working class, that, you know, the Farages and all these shy talk, that they would have some sort of common interest, and that would improve working class conditions. And you've also got the exact same argument between Trump and the Bezoses and the Gateses and all this all these. There's an absolute class division within the capitalist class. And that sort of thing I don't think is going to go away. But so to me, those are two illustrations of where that would certainly support what Darren was saying. But just another thing. Two minor points. The super rich have done extremely well, and you've not done your own work very well, Paddy, or you've forgotten what we've learned in Capital, because there is a parallel between what's going on at the minute and what was going on at the time that Marx was writing Capital. Because if you remember, at the time, the increase in the amount of lackeys that the capitalist class were employing shot up. As the disposable income grew and grew, they were accumulating capital, but they had enough not only to reinvest in the industries, but also to invest in lackeys. So that's one interesting parallel that makes it worthwhile reading Capital, by the way. Our study courses. But you also said, Paddy, I'm going to take exception to what you said earlier on about the fact that you've got these people blasting off into space, and who gives a shit about the environment? Well, I think that I'm actually going to write an article that this will frighten them. I think we do need to join the dots for people, because that gobshite, what's he called, Musk, as the owner of Tesla cars, said a fortnight ago, we're going to sell Tesla cars in exchange for Bitcoin, right? So this fantasy money, and then 10 days later, I think we're not going to sell Tesla cars for Bitcoin because we want to protect the environment. Because apparently a lot of this stuff to do with Bitcoin occurs in China, and it's very, very polluting because of the amount of energy they use. Therefore, to protect the environment, the dear people at Tesla will not be using Bitcoin. They will not be selling flights to space, which will burn up goodness knows how many resources. You will not be able to buy that with Bitcoin. Now, this is a huge contradiction. And the problem with our fellow workers is that they cannot join the dots. This is a huge contradiction in the capitalist society. The one side is saying, we've got a problem with the environment. Yeah, but okay, we've got this other part of the company that says we need to make money, and we're gonna make money by burning up however many resources those, and it doesn't make any difference. So we've got to explain to workers that's one of the ridiculous parts of capitalism. Okay, that's up.
Okay, right. Thanks. You can explain to me later what it was that I didn't understand, because I didn't really understand your explanation, I'm afraid. The bit about the lackeys kind of passed me by, but no, it's probably just me. It did occur to me. I mean, we were talking about, you know, there's division within the ruling class, the owning class, and we know that. You know, of course, they're always fighting and stabbing each other in the back. But a historical example just came to my mind just then, which you can just take it or leave it if you like. The time was when the 17th century, I think it was, when Spain and Portugal basically carved up the world between them. They were the world superpowers. Portugal took the east, Spain took the west. And as far as I recall, they didn't have a single war between them. Now, they all fought everyone else. They fought the English, they fought the Dutch, they fought the French, etc., etc. But as far as I recall, they were quite happy to divide the world up between the two of them, and they didn't have a war. So it's the idea of division within the ruling class just depends how many of them there are, which kind of was my point. Going back to the graph again, you see the vertical trajectory. I'm just sort of speculating about where that goes and what would happen if you only had a few, you know, trillionaires or quadrillionaires left. Why would they bother fighting? They're just, what would be the point? You know, they could do what Spain and Portugal did and just carve up the world amongst them, between them. That was my thought, anyway. But, I mean, I'm quite happy to be corrected on that. So, Darren next.
Yeah, I just did a quick Google search, Paddy. There was lots of wars between Spain and Portugal in the 18th century. Part of it was, I mean, maybe there were skirmishes, but part of it was over, like, South American borders and whatnot. So, I mean, there isn't actually, that what you were saying there actually made me think of something else. I don't know if this is true, but apologies for liberal democracy. I've always said there's never been a war between two liberal democracies. So if that's true, then surely that suggests we should be the plutocrats, if they want sort of peace and quiet to accumulate their riches, they should be spreading liberal democracy rather than thinking of getting rid of it.
Well, in my own defence, I did say the 17th century, not the 18th century, by which time many other players were in the game.
Okay.
That's interesting, though. I've heard that before, that liberal democracies have never had a war. Anybody else got know anything about that? Can anybody think of? There's been lots of wars. I mean, it depends how you define liberal democracy, I suppose. I mean, the Balkan Wars, weren't they liberal democracies? Just for one.
Which Balkan Wars are you referring to?
The ones in the 1990s.
I don't think the former Socialist Republic of Yugoslavia were liberal democracies. I mean, I think the nationalist upsurge within Yugoslavia, like Tudjman and Croatia, etc., and Milosevic and Serbia, you know, they had their nationalist upsurges under the cloak of democracy. But I'm not sure if you could say they were liberal democracies. It might just be me, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, presumably, if you've got two countries at war with each other and they've both got, well, presumably they've got political leaders or political stroke military leaders, you know, on the basis that they're having a war, I suppose you could argue that they're not technically liberal democracies anymore. I don't know. Maybe that's just a semantic point.
India and Pakistan.
No, well, yeah. Well, they haven't actually had a war, have they? They've had a few border skirmishes.
Well, they have.
Well, not since they were established as liberal democracies, I think, after 1949.
There has been fighting.
Fighting, yeah, but not an all-out war.
Skirmishes, I don't know. It's all down to definition, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's the less developed liberal, so-called liberal democracies, isn't it? Not the more advanced ones. The Balkans, not really liberal democracies. Call them that if you want, but sort of much less developed. Same with India and Pakistan. You know, you've not had it in France or Germany or Italy or et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, you can't see a situation in which that would be likely to happen even. They'd sort it out one way or the other, you know, without going to war against one another.
Can I ask a question?
Of course.
Yeah, I'm curious, if we're talking about the super rich, do you think that in recent years, some of them in the public eye have got a more exalted status than even like 20 or 30 years ago, 40 years ago. You know, I'm just kind of curious, you know, like the Bill Gates of these world, the Musks, the Bezoses, the Buffets. I mean, I still stand by what I said about Bezos and how anonymous he is, but there does seem to be a cult around Musk. There was a bit of a cult around, like, Steve Jobs and Gates and Buffett, these people. And, you know, that kind of comes back to, you know, who do we blame? Do we blame the plutocrats or do we blame our fellow workers? You know, like, I get the impression there's a lot of fellow workers who hang on these guys every work, you know. So I wonder if that's like a new thing or a, something that's come back, you know, because I don't think it's always been like that.
I mean, some of these sort of household name billionaires are, you know, quite famously philanthropists. They put a lot of money into sort of philanthropic causes of their own choosing, obviously, you know. So Bill Gates decides that, you know, the world's number one priority is malaria. So, okay, so it is a high priority. But the point, you know, the issue is that, of course, he gets to decide. You know, there isn't a debate about it. Mark Zuckerberg is one of those, one of the other people who's signed up to this, the Carnegie Philanthropist Club. I forgot the name of it. Somebody might remember. There's a few of them in it. Gates is in it. Elon Musk probably is in it too. But at the same time, these are the billionaires we've heard of. These are the kind of publicity seekers. You know, they're quite happy to get to be seen in public and written about. But the sort of number of philanthropists, I think, amongst the billionaires is around about 1 or 2% at most. These people have tried to get other billionaires to sort of be philanthropists, and they're not interested. They just want to buy their super yachts, and you know. And they're far from being publicity seekers. They're allergic to publicity. They don't want anyone to know who they are. I don't think it's not to do with cults of personality. It's, you know, the point I was making is that they are just now so astoundingly rich. It's just unprecedented. I mean, these people are richer than anyone's ever been in all of human history. You know, times a lot. So, you know, we are in living in interesting times, or they certainly are. Dougie, I think, was next. Dougie.
No, I mean, if you look at how workers vote in capitalism, you know, they often vote for millionaires or people who are very rich or whatever. I remember, I think there was a thing Marx said, you know, I think he went to the Isle of Man and there was a poster, and I think it said, vote for this guy because he's rich or whatever, you know. So there is this kind of idea that rich people will look after society better. I mean, they call it, and the Tories, is that they go to Eton and then they end up becoming Prime Minister or in the Cabinet or whatever, you know, after they've been to Cambridge or whatever, or Oxford or whatever. So, I mean, I think it's to do with the media as well, really. You know, there's always this thing that the Tories supposedly run the economy better than Labour, but that's possibly because Labour tended to get in when the economy was going down the tubes or whatever, yeah. So I don't know, but I mean, it's not just the super rich; it's the relatively well off that get put into parliament, you know, backed by the workers, really. You know.
Well, that's right, isn't it? I mean, people vote for millionaires and billionaires because, you know, they assume that these people know how the system works and know how to work the system. So, you know, this is what Trump said. You know, He was no fool. He got to be a millionaire or a billionaire, all through his own efforts, obviously. And therefore, the American people could trust him because he knew how the system worked. Because, you know, that's a far cry from the idea that once elected, these people will act in the interests of people. Of course, that's the big problem. Why would they? I think Darren's next. Darren?
Yeah, just a quick thing. I just remembered, you know, talking about people who are like working people who are so sort of enthralled to the rich. I had to look this up because I thought I was kind of kidding myself on. Somebody of the Kardashian family, this sort of the Kardashians, one of them is, I think her name's like Kristen Jenner, and she's got a makeup company, and she was up to like personal wealth of like some like $900 million allegedly, and her fans set up a GoFundMe, tried to set up a GoFundMe page so she could become a billionaire. This is how sucked in so many working people are. You know, they actually felt sorry for her, that she only had like, she was so close to being a billionaire without being a billionaire. So people were actually donating money to a GoFundMe page for this woman to see if they could make her a billionaire. I mean, that's a true story. You know, I wish I could make some laugh, but I'd make my own fortune as a fiction writer. You know, it's amazing. But that's how, I don't know, is that Stockholm Syndrome? It's something, there's something wrong with the world if people are that alienated that they decided to give some of them few dollars to this woman who is so rich already. Yeah, that's the world we live in.
That is amazing. Yeah, that's true. Coincidentally, I was looking at figures for billionaires and how many there were at the moment, and I accidentally came across a gender breakdown of billionaires, if you're interested. And the gender breakdown of billionaires in 2019 was about 10 to 1, male to female. So that's quite curious, isn't it? Don't know if you want to read anything into that. But Steve, next.
That's just fascinating what Darren said. I feel quite ill, actually, after that. I'm sorry, I've listened to a cheap shot. Paddy, the philanthropist that I think we ought to be more concerned with rather than these buggers is the ragged trousered sort. The sort that will bloody well put money to allow some rich bugger to become a billionaire-ess. Sorry, it's a cheap shot. Thank you.
Yeah, of course, the real philanthropists are the volunteer workers. We've observed this several times before that the volunteer sort of workforce of the world it's around about a billion people. It could run socialism even if nobody else got out of bed, essentially. That's about 1 in 7 of the world's population. I mean, they could just run socialism without anybody else doing anything. Not that that would be desirable, but they're the real philanthropists. Steve again.
Yeah, I'll just go slight. Well, I mean, it's not. As an aside, if people on here have got, if anybody is in, well, got any sort of knowledge or skills about Facebook or what have you, can you get in touch with us so that because we're trying to come up with a way of coordinating party propaganda across online and social media, because we're not doing very well at the moment. So if anybody feels they've got any social skills, social media skills that they could contribute, just let me or Paddy know, will you? All right. That's all.
I think Darren's next.
Oh, no, Steve, I really think the person you should contact is the guy who runs, I don't want to say his name online in case, because I don't know if he wants to be anonymous, but the guy who runs the party's Twitter page.
Yeah, we know about that. We know about
that. Yeah, he's so much more successful at what he does in terms of raising the profile. The rest of us on Facebook, it's a bit of a mishmash, to be honest.
Do you use Facebook yourself, Darren?
I do, yeah. I do, but to be honest, I'm personally not inclined to engage in too many political discussions on Facebook, because I'm just not a big fan of like committing yourself to like sitting at a computer writing like a reply for like 45 minutes to someone who will dismiss it in 30 seconds. You know, that's just me, you know. Some people don't mind doing stuff like that.
I think it's a nonsense. It's just that we could do with a group of people that are consistently putting stuff out with the same sort of message, and we're not coordinating ourselves. I've got no knowledge. I think I opened a Facebook account for work purposes, and I've never used it. I've no idea what goes on. I've no idea about Twitter or anything like that, because I've always assumed.
There are SPGB groups on Facebook. I have like an unofficial one for the standards, which I just use to like occasionally like post like old articles from the like scan and stuff. It's not very coordinated. I mean, to be honest, if you were to actually try and sort of reach out to people involved in it, it might actually be a good opportunity for them to actually have a proper look at what they're doing on Facebook, because it isn't coordinated. It is a bit of a mess.
Yeah.
Whereas the guy on Twitter, what he does, he's raised the profile of his account so high, it's extraordinary in comparison to the rest of it. I mean, a lot of that is people hating on him, but he's obviously got the skin. He's got a very thick skin, because it would crush me, but it doesn't seem to bother him. But he's got like 30,000 followers or something on Twitter, you know, like that.
Well, that's fantastic.
I would ask him. Yeah, I would ask him, you know, because I think he obviously knows what he's doing, whereas the rest of us are kind of making up as we go along, you know.
Can I just say that 12 months ago, I would have not gone, I wouldn't have touched this subject with a barge pole. But I've got to urge comrades, you've seen what's happened with Black Lives Matter. They've not had a political organisation. Same as these Hong Kong demonstrators. They've managed to organise over Facebook, Twitter, whatever, yeah, or Instagram. And we're not doing it. And it's something that we've got to get to grips with as a party. We contribute in different ways, but this is something that we could all do. I remember seeing stuff on SP Opener from Alan Johnston, and he's saying, can you not give 10 minutes a day to something like this? 10 minutes on your telephone, sending a message. The party's got this information that should be known. You know, I'm becoming more and more convinced. Particularly, we will look at the way that public meetings have gone downhill. We've got to get our act together with this bloody technology. I wish I were 30 years younger, because I'd probably be a bit more adept.
Okay, well, we seem to have gone right off the subject. So, does anybody want to go back on the subject, or just carry on with this? I think Dougie's next.
Yeah, I just got to mention Facebook. Facebook's a double-edged sword, really. You know, there has been actually some members putting anti-vaccine, anti-COVID things on Facebook, really. You know, and I've argued against them, really. You know, so I mean, some members, you know, they put stuff on that is totally against science, really. You know, so I don't know, but I mean, I do post things on Facebook, usually stuff other people have posted, and I send it around to my friends and stuff like that. But, I mean, I think Facebook, I mean, it's like all media things, right? You know, you've got as many idiots as you've got people who are saying reasonable stuff, right? You know, there's a lot of bad stuff on Facebook, right? You know, and people tend to believe a lot of nonsense, right, sometimes.
Who's reading this stuff? It's our fellow workers that's reading this stuff, and we're not there doing anything about it.
Hang on, Steve. Freddie's in the queue next. Freddie?
Yeah, thanks, Paddy. I mean, I hear what you say, Paddy, but going back on track, and I've no great contribution to make to this right now, but it's just coincidental that what the subject matter that we are talking about Facebook, isn't something that I've ever used. But I could maybe get used to the idea, but it's something that we're going this New Yorkshire discussion group are meeting a week on Saturday, and that's actually one of the subject matters that we're talking about. as Facebook. So something might come out of that. That's been finished.
Okay, well, we seem to have got a bit derailed now. Anybody got anything to say? You can talk about as well as talk about Facebook now if you want.
Well, it tied them in together. I mean, Elon Musk uses Twitter like it's his own personal property, you know. I mean, somebody mentioned earlier on the business about the Bitcoin, how he basically tanked Bitcoin temporarily when he said that Tesla would no longer accept payment in Bitcoin for their cars. He announced that on Twitter. You know, it wasn't via a newspaper, it wasn't via an interview on Fox, it was via Twitter. You know, I mean, this is, you know, whether we like it or not, people do use the social media. And I guess what Steve says, right, you know, I mean, if people are saying certain ideas, which we have to try to argue against, push back against, then if they're not going to come to our meetings, we have to go to theirs, you know, and that just happens to be Twitter, Facebook and TikTok, etc. at the moment, you know. Thank you.
Yeah, I think didn't one of these Kardashians you mentioned say something rude about Instagram and it wiped billions of dollars off their share price because of that. So yeah, these people are like, well, you know, social media influencers, and they've got just sort of stupendous numbers of followers. It's very weird for a lot of us because we just think people must be sheep, you know, but we don't know because we're not following these people, so maybe they're hugely entertaining. I know a lot of young people are on a thing called Twitch where they basically watch someone else playing a computer game, and you'd think, why would anyone do that? But they do it because it's entertaining, because these people have got a lot of banter, they're quite witty. And they, you know, they listen for the banter and the chat, rather more, you know, more than the game itself. So, there are lots of very entertaining people out there. So, it's not the case that people are sheep. It's just that they're getting their entertainment from a different source, from, you know, where, you know, earlier generations got it from TV and film. Now it's all coming from YouTube and Twitter and Twitch and things like that. And so, yeah, just to echo the point, that is where we need to be active, of course. Any other thoughts on the original subject, or have we sort of killed it stone dead now?
Can I just point out something that possibly people in this meeting don't know? There is an internet committee that is working to get to improve our online presence. And so if you've got any input that you want to make, let us know that way. Paddy's on it, I'm on it, and I can't think who else is on it. Mandy, for example. So if you've got any input that you think will be useful to us, as I said, particularly about the technicalities of putting stuff out onto the social media, then please do let us know. Thanks.
On that, can I make it like a semi-serious suggestion? This sounds like a really ridiculous suggestion, but there is like a serious intent behind it. I honestly think the party needs a meme committee. If you want to raise the profile of the party on the internet, one of the quickest ways of doing it would be to get the wittiest people in the party. And basically get them to create memes. You'd be surprised how these things go viral. I mentioned on Spopen, I think a few weeks back, somebody had shared an old cartoon of Peter Riggs, the Reform versus Revolution cartoon, where you've got the reformists going round in the carousel or something, and then you've got the revolutionaries in a half-empty bus, and it says the parts went full. Somebody shared that on Reddit, and it got like 10,000 votes. People on Reddit either vote something up or vote something down. It got like 10,000 people liked that cartoon enough to vote it up. You know, and that's from a cartoon that appeared in the Standard over 25 years ago. But you honestly, the party members are talented enough to create memes. Honestly, if it's timeless enough, that will be shared on the internet 5-10 years from now, you know. And I just shared, sorry, talking too much, I apologise. I'm only trying to speak because nobody else is speaking. But I shared Paddy's, you know, the capitalism of the kid stuff to a guy, to a page on Twitter 2 or 3 days ago. This is a Twitter account that publishes, it's called Radical Reprints. They reprint books. They've got like 10,000 followers. And they'd never seen it before. You know, sometimes we presume that people have seen these things that we kind of know about, like capitalism or our kids stuff or whatever. And, you know, there's always a new generation of people out there who haven't seen, you know, that video, or haven't seen that thing that Mike Foster designed years ago, that brilliant sort of rail card that, some of us gave out thousands. You know, these things, you know, can be shared and shared again, you know, and I honestly think stuff like that can help in its own wee way to share that, to raise the profile of the party, you know. Wee things like that, you know, and it is like Alan Johnson said, sometimes it can be 10 minutes a week, you know. You know, it's really not that hard. Okay, thank you.
Well, just on that, Darren, I think you're almost creepily psychic, because only just the other day we were having a discussion on the Internet Committee about having, the equivalent of a meme committee. We actually were talking about that. And the idea is that we try and generate memes targeting certain articles in the current Standard and promoting them on Twitter and Facebook and pointing them back to that particular article. So whether there's any wit in sufficient wit in the party, as you said was needed, that remains to be seen. But we're certainly talking about doing that. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, that cartoon, you know, the Peter Rigg one, that was put on Facebook, but I don't know how many shares it got. I'm not sure, but I think Mandy or somebody put that on Facebook. Right? Yeah, I gave it a like or whatever, and probably shared it. But I mean, memes are one way to go, I'm sure. Yeah.
The great thing about that cartoon, apologies, that pops up. I mean, I just gave one extreme example where it was like really popular on that Reddit page. But that pops up so many times, it's unbelievable. You know, it just pops up everywhere, and it's people, you know, okay, I'd love it if they knew it came from the Socialist Standard, et cetera, et cetera. But sometimes it was just the actual message in the cartoon. It was enough, you know. And, you know, some of these like wee germs of ideas that we're putting forward against leadership, you know, against nations, you know, against, you know, wages system, et cetera. Sometimes it doesn't have to have the party's name on it. I would prefer if it did. But they will crop up and new people will see them, and it just sows a seed. You know, it's all it does, all we're doing at the moment is sowing seeds, you know. Christ, I sound like a lay preacher. You know, Nate Sharp, sorry.
Okay, well, it doesn't look like anyone else has got anything to say, so I suppose we might as well call it a day. Thanks to everyone for coming. And don't forget that on Friday we've got a talk by Pat Deutz on what is social progress. And then next Wednesday we've got a speaker, not me, someone else, Glenn Morris, who's going to do an FAQ on what's it like being a socialist. I think we've all got our own ideas about that. So there we are. That's two things coming up. What is social progress on Friday night? So... hope to see you all then.